Hello and welcome everyone back to the Hold for Hold Pro Wrestling Podcast. I am back in the Cramp Closet, aka the Hold for Hold headquarters. And this has been a week, boy. It has been a minute. As you probably realized, I did not upload last week. I did tweet out, you know, I was taking a personal week because, you know, life is pretty tough sometimes. And as much as I love pro wrestling, I couldn't find the motivation to talk about it last week, not only with just like the absolute terrible real world events going on, but then also like my job has just been changing a lot lately, and same with my girlfriend's job, and so there's a lot of stress, and I just needed to not be in the cramp closet. Unfortunately, I just opted to take my girlfriend out for a nice dinner. We enjoy some dinner with some friends as Dynamite was happening. So yeah, I'm not going to talk about the wrestling from last week, unfortunately, because I didn't watch much of it. I did catch like some of the Dynamite last week, and then I caught a little bit of Rampage and a little bit of SmackDown, but I pretty much was just kind of taking a mental break, and you know, that's always okay, man. The world's tough, you know. So anyways, though, I wanted to come back. I'm excited to come back because we have some pretty huge stuff going on in the world of wrestling. And gosh, it's going to be a little bit of a shorter maybe episode. I don't know. I might ramble on. But at least for the topics we're covering, I'm not going to be discussing Monday Night Raw from this past week and Friday Night SmackDown from this past week. I didn't really watch it that, you know, like I didn't watch it. I watched some bits on Twitter. I saw the Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn segment from SmackDown was really funny. And then on Raw, I saw a little bit of the Seth Rollins promo that he cut on Cody Rhodes, which, you know, whatever. I just saw a lot of people saying that this week was kind of, you can miss it, so I kind of did. But the big news of the weekend was neither show. It was definitely Double or Nothing. So that's going to be covered today. I was able to pluck down that $50 and watch that this weekend. And yeah, we have a lot of news leading into that as well. So let's start with the weekly news roundup, you know, the big important stuff. And it's a lot of drama this week. I cut a lot of the fat from this week or this past couple weeks of news because, you know, let's just talk about the stuff that everyone's talking about. It's Sasha Banks and Naomi. They're seemingly suspended without pay now. That's the report going around. And there's like no clear end in sight. Their merch has been taken off WWE Shop. They've been taken out of the intro credits. So seems like the situation is getting uglier and uglier. And like I said, man, I'm 100% workers' rights. I'm in the camp of Sasha Banks and Naomi are justified in walking out. I think they've had plenty of reasons over their tenure in the WWE to walk out. And this is not a big deal for me of like, oh, they should be punished, blah, blah, blah. No, I think the way that WWE is handling it is really petty as well, especially with the like statements they were putting out. And now, like every time they mention the tag tournament, it's because of how unprofessional they walked out. It's so stupid. I can't stand it. And it's really soured me on the product again. I mean, I go in between of liking WWE product because of their like just bad business sense. Bad business sense in the way of morality, not in their revenue, because I know they make a lot of money. So yeah, that's like the big update though, is that they've seemingly been suspended without pay. They're not getting merch sales anymore. So it's just like, I don't know what's going to happen up to this point. Honestly, the unfortunate part is, you know, I feel like Sasha Banks has more leverage than Naomi does, especially with the way that AEW treats their women's division. I don't think Naomi has like that clear other path that Sasha has, where Sasha, she's in the Star Wars universe. She clearly can break out on her own. She can do acting gigs, whatever. She's not as dependent on pro wrestling. And so that's the only bit that I'm like concerned of is like, I hope they're able to get what they want, even though it's a little bit of an uneven amount of leverage they both carry. But you never know, man. Naomi's husband is like another person that she can probably, you know, have on her side. And that's another big name. So, you know, things like that. I don't know. We'll see where this goes. Hopefully they get what they want. And, you know, that's all you can really hope for. Speaking of which, we're going to discuss more contract disputes, more asking what they are seem to have deserved, and that's MJF. Oh boy, this is a different situation from Naomi and Sasha Banks. And I know a lot of people are like mad about this whole thing. So let's just like run down the facts first. So MJF has been having contract disputes with Tony Khan seemingly since about April. You know, he wants more money and seemingly he might not want to sign for a longer period of time, which is pretty standard for athletes in like sports world. You want more money, so you have to sign for more time. And it doesn't look like that's the case that he wants. So now there's been like, you know, on-screen promos mentioning it, and this has really come to a head here as we headed into Double or Nothing's. There was a lot of reports saying that MJF no-showed a meet and greet, and then that seemingly was confirmed that he did not. Sean Ross Sapp was able to confirm that he did not make that meet and greet, but was spotted at the casinos. So fun. And then it was reported later on that he has a flight booked for Long Island, New York, the same day, or maybe the day of Double or Nothing. Either way, before Double or Nothing, he had a flight booked to go back to Long Island, seemingly signifying that he was going to no-show the pay-per-view. And so there was a lot of anxiety going into Double or Nothing if the Wardlow and MJF match would happen. But thankfully, cooler heads prevailed, and it did happen. Now, in this instance, a walkout would have hurt Wardlow more than it would have helped MJF. And I really think this whole situation isn't helping MJF get the leverage he needs for a bigger contract. And I purely mean this as a leverage point. I don't mean this in a moral sense because, again, Tony Khan is a billionaire. I'm okay with you not going to a meet and greet to stick into a billionaire. I'm totally fine with it. I just am worried that MJF is losing leverage by having such a messy contract negotiation because people at WWE like Vince McMahon or Bruce Pritchard can see this and say, well, we're going to lowball you because you don't have anywhere else to go because you're burning bridges at AEW. You know, so I would really hope that MJF, you know, isn't burning that bridge, is able to get the money he wants to get because that man is a phenomenal talent, a once-in-a-generation talent, and he deserves to get paid whatever he probably thinks he's earned because he is. I mean, he is truly the most buzzworthy guy on that roster, and that roster is stacked right now, absolutely stacked. You have CM Punk, you have Hangman Page, Kenny Omega, The Forbidden Door, Danielson, and MJF steals the show most nights. So, yeah, that's just my big concern. I hope the man gets what he, you know, wants. Is filled like he's earned because he has earned it. And yeah, I just hope that that leverage keeps in his favor. But I've been seeing a lot of people be like downing this and saying it's always the people that are just like on the wrong side of things. They're always like, well, what's this? Why is it a double standard when Naomi leaves but not MJF? And it's like, well, that's two different situations. And I'm still just in the camp of I want people to have leverage. I want people to be able to bargain for more money, especially if wrestling isn't being unionized like it should be. They aren't being paid as employees. I'm cool with this. I'm cool with anyone doing what they need to. Although I appreciate MJF actually did come to the pay-per-view because this was a big moment for Wardlow, and I think he recognized that. And while the match, we'll talk about in a minute, was very short and very truncated, it did get the point home. And it'll probably be looked at, unfortunately, with like man, what could have been, what this match could have been, but at least we got it, you know. So yeah, let's springboard that into Double or Nothing, because this was a pretty big night. While I didn't feel like many of the matches were up to the scale of a pay-per-view, unfortunately, and I kind of think some of the Dynamite matches we had leading up to this pay-per-view should have been swapped with some of the matches on here, just because of the kind of a lack of build for many matches, and then the matches themselves, while being fine, they just kind of felt like a TV level match, which is tough criticism, and I think it's criticism that NXT often got for their takeovers because of how good their weekly television is in terms of in-ring wrestling. I think that AEW is kind of hitting that same spot where it's like Dynamite delivers on really good wrestling, and so pay-per-views, they have to do something insane for us to really like see the difference. And I think they did that in some matches, but there was definitely some matches that didn't need to be here. But overall, though, I thought the pay-per-view, it didn't fly by, but it didn't feel like the full 5 hours it was. And I thought that we had some really great moments, and some that are probably going to go down to my like moments of the year category towards December. And man, did I love that Anarchy in the Arena match. That was so good. And then let's cut to the chase. We have a new champion, guys. We have a new world champion. I didn't want to see it. I wasn't able to put up my predictions for this pay-per-view because of last week. But man, I would have told you that I didn't want Punk to win. I wanted Hangman to win out. I wanted him to be the savior of AEW. I bought in 100% to this story. I was loving where it's going. I don't think it's necessarily over yet, but yeah, man, it's a great moment nonetheless. I mean, CM Punk worked to get that title, and it's a fun match. It's a little bit clunky because CM Punk was trying to find his footing with those buckshot lariats, but nonetheless, it's a huge moment. Very proud of Mr. Phil Brooks for the victory there. But yeah, new champ. I didn't expect a title change this soon into his reign, and I didn't expect Punk to be the guy to take it off of him. I really was holding out hope for MJF to be that guy. But I think just these recent contract disputes kind of put a little more doubt into that. But yeah, it was a great moment. So we're going to run down the card, starting in the buy-in that had the debut match of Hookhausen. Hook and Danhausen took on Smart Mark Sterling and his client Tony Nese. It's a very cute match. We get like a really nice moment during the entrance where Hook does this typical like leaning in the corner, like really just pouting, and Danhausen just awkwardly looking at the camera and pointing, and it's so good. It's so cute. But essentially Hook does all the work here. He suplexes Tony Nese, gets that like that Tazplex in, which is such a rough move. He gives that to Mark Sterling. Yeah, he gives the Tazplex to Mark Sterling. He tags in Danhausen. Danhausen literally just steps on Mark for the pin. And yeah, really fun little match there. And then we have the opening bout, the bout that I kind of already talked about. It's Maxwell Jacob Friedman taking on his war piggy, Wardlow. And yeah, this was really truncated. I think this would have been a fantastic match given the other circumstance of like, you know, all the crap that was going on. But I think this is fun enough. We got 10 power bombs to MJF to put him away for Wardlow to get the victory and become officially All Elite. Really fun stuff there. They had MJF stretchered out, so I'm guessing, you know, he's not going to be on TV for a little bit. There was also reports, I don't think I mentioned this, there's also new reports that say that he is having a meeting with Tony Khan today at like 8 o'clock, or maybe yesterday at 8 o'clock. Either way, him and Tony Khan are supposed to have like a big meeting. That's the report. But Sean Ross Sapp wasn't able to confirm that that was real or a work, so we're gonna see. I should mention that as well. A lot of people are saying, you know, the MJF contract stuff is a work, and it's definitely not, guys. If you really think that's a work, I really don't envy you. That is 100% serious, and I think the match of MJF and Wardlow really drives home how much it's not a work, because MJF got in, got out, and left pretty fast. But yeah, following that, we had the Young Bucks taking on the Hardys. This was one of those matches where I know on paper it's a dream match, right? But we have seen it before in ROH. They had a ladder war match, so it was a ton of fun. But it is a dream match, so I know it deserves to be on pay-per-view, but the build itself was just very rushed. And then the match is a bit clunky. Jeff especially is slow in this match, and I can't, you know, I can't talk. I'm in a closet. I'm recording a podcast. I'm not out there wrestling. It just seems like he's been overworked in recent months, especially with that Owen tournament. He had like, what, 3 matches? And one of them was that Darby match that was just bonkers. So yeah, it just felt a little bit slower. I think this match, if they do it again, which they have to do it again, I think they need to give it a little more time, give both the Hardys some time to rest, recuperate, and then we can get a fresh Jeff and, you know, good Young Bucks match. But yeah, this was still pretty fun, and the Young Bucks fell here to a Swanton Bomb by Jeff Hardy. Following this, another match that had a really rushed build, and it's Anna Jay taking on Jade Cargill. Obviously, Jade Cargill was never going to lose this match, but we get 2 debuts in this match. So towards the finish here, Jay and Cargill are on the top rope, and Jade is like actually sitting on the rope, and Anna Jay is like giving it to her. And then we get the debut of Stokely Hathaway, formerly known as Malcolm Bivens. He comes down, distracts Anna Jay. This allows Jay Cargill to lock her in for a super, a avalanche Jaded for the pinfall win there. Big moment there for Malcolm Bivens. I love Malcolm Bivens. And I'm honestly very surprised that he is in AEW. He made it seem like he had no interest in continuing with wrestling. But I know money talks, man. Money talks. And I'm sure Tony Khan gave him a fair pay, because I think Malcolm Bivens is a phenomenal talent, and he's going to be perfectly paired with Jade Cargill. I think that's going to be a lot of fun. But after this match, Statlander comes down the ring because the baddies are beating up on Anna Jay, so she makes the save. And then we also get the debut of Athena, someone that I've been really hoping would come to AEW. I kind of thought she was going to be the Joker in that Owen Cup tournament. But yeah, Athena is here, and she scares the baddies away, making her intentions very clear, though, that she wants Jade, and I think that's going to be such a good match. And so far, that is the first person that I legitimately think could beat Jade Cargill, although I don't think she will. Following that, we finally have the culmination of the House of Black and Death Triangle feud, the feud that many have felt has gone on too long, but in their defense, they have the visa issues, they have the injury, so I'm just glad to see this like blow-off match, and it was stellar. It's such a good match, and as you would expect it would be. But towards the finish here, we get another surprise of the night. The lights go out, lights come back up, and it's revealed that Julia Hart is now part of House of Black. She spits the Black Mist on the Pack, Black Mass to Pack for the pinfall win for House of Black. Yeah, big moment there. Should it have happened a little while ago? Probably, but it's still cool to see, and I think there's going to be a fun addition to the House of Black, granted if they do something with it. I don't know where their next feud's going to be honest with y'all. I could potentially see them going after Jurassic Express. I would love to see them go against the Blackpool Combat Club. I can also kind of see them doing Jericho Appreciation Society. I don't know. We'll see where this ends up. Hopefully they get like more prominent spot, because that group is stacked with talent. Following this, we get the finals of the men's bracket of the Owen Cup Memorial Tournament. It is Samoa Joe taking on Adam Cole. Samoa Joe is like, he's definitely slowed down, and I don't know if I've talked about this. He's definitely slowed down a bit, but he's making everything more intentional. All of his moves feel more impactful. And yeah, we get a really fun match here. between the two. But in the end, Adam Cole wins with a bunch of super kicks. Plenty of interference from Bobby Fish during this match too. And he hits a boom for the win. And then, following that, we get the next final match of the Owen Cup tournament, being Dr. Britt Baker, DMD, and Ruby Soho. This is a really fun match, as I expected it would be. And we see DMD win with a roll-up. I thought this one was the more 50-50 match, but once I saw Adam Cole win with the pink trunks and then DMD come out with her pink get-up, it was pretty clear who was winning this. So after the match, Britt Baker and Adam Cole are met by Martha Hart. She made her way up to the ramp to reward Cole and Britt Baker for winning the trophy. She then thanks the audience for all the love that was sent to the Hart family, and saying that this tournament allows for them to celebrate Owen Hart in the squared circle once again. She like gave some shout outs to Tony Khan and Chris Jericho and the staff of the Dark Side of the Ring. It was kind of like a breaking of kayfabe moment, which I always think is really nice to see, because this is not something that would happen in WWE. You have two of your biggest heels going up there and, you know, receiving this award graciously. And then you have her mentioning like Chris Jericho, someone who's right now one of the most dastardly heels in kayfabe. I really enjoyed this moment. I think it was really touching. She then gave Britt and Cole these championship belts that are not going to be defended, just like they just look cool. So cool to see. Very cool to see. Following this, we have another, man, I'm just going to say it. I'm glad this is over. I'm glad this feud's over. It's Scorpio Sky, Ethan Page, and Paige VanZant taking on the team of Frankie Kazarian, Sammy Guevara, and Ty Conti. The stipulation here was that if Frankie's team lost, they would no longer be eligible to rematch for the TNT Championship, I believe, as long as Scorpio Sky is champ, not altogether. But we'll see. I may be wrong about that. Right there, why would Frankie take this match? He hates Sammy Guevara, which I enjoy this because of like the realism of like this man can't stand that he has to team with these two idiots, but this is his only chance to like really get his revenge, so he's gonna do it. This is like an all right match. We just see Frankie like completely get mad at Sammy, kick him out of the ring, and then we get Scorpio Sky picks him up for a TKO for the win. And I guess this is over. I'm just guessing it's over and we're fine and we can move on. And now Miro can come back and take this title off Scorpio Sky, because I miss Miro so much. Following this, we had a match that truly deserved to be on Dynamite. Did not deserve to be on a pay-per-view, but was good either way, because it had one of my favorite wrestlers, not of all time, but pretty close, Kyle O'Reilly taking on Darby Allin. This is the match no one asked for, but it was a lot of fun. And we see a clean victory from Kyle O'Reilly. Pretty surprisingly, he busted up Allin's nose with a knee that was really nasty. And then they do like a suicide dive through the middle rope. Darby does. Gets caught by Kyle on the outside into a guillotine choke. That was a pretty cool spot. Following this, we have Serena Deeb taking on Thunder Rosa in an absolute banger match that I knew it would be. And this was nearly my match of the night, but we're going to talk about that next. But yeah, this is just a really fun match. Rosa wins after she does like the superplex roll through into the Thunder Rosa driver. I hope this isn't the end of their feud. I could see these two having at least one more match, but you never know with AEW. They don't love to do rematches. Good stuff. Great stuff, actually. Oh, speaking of great stuff, let's talk Arena Anarchy match. This was anarchy, and I loved it. We have Jericho's Appreciation Society, consisting of Chris Jericho himself, Daniel Garcia, Matt Menard, Jake Hager, and Angelo Parker, taking on the team of Eddie Kingston, Santana, Ortiz, Bryan Danielson, and of course, Jon Moxley, with the company of William Regal. One thing that I think everyone talked about already, but I love it. I've been asking for this forever. It's one of the absolute like greatest things that ECW ever did was when New Jack would come out, his music would loop while he would do the beatdown. And often it would loop until the match is over and it would keep going because he won. So we had that moment here as Jon Moxley's Wild Thing looped during the beginning of this match as they were just absolutely brawling. This match was a mess, and it was the best kind of mess. It felt like an ECW match in the best way possible. And it would make a lot of sense if it was mostly orchestrated by Chris Jericho, because there was a lot of ECW touches here that I just loved. But I think this has gotten the moment of the night for me, moment of the week, maybe even the moment of the year, as, man, this is just so much fun. So Danielson has Jericho in the ring, in the LaBelle lock. The ring's absolutely tattered, by the way. Like, all the ring ropes are messed up. There's no turnbuckle pads. There's tables everywhere. There's carnage. Like, everywhere in the arena just looks like a bomb went off. And Eddie Kingston comes stumbling down the ramp with his head busted open, blood dripping on his Yankees shirt, carrying a gasoline can that he's just frustrated and just, like, dead set. He's looking right at Jericho. He's holding the can. He's walking in the ring. He's twisting off the cap. Gets in the ring. And Danielson has Jericho in a LaBelle lock. So Kingston just pours the gasoline on both of them. He doesn't care who's in his way. And then he goes into his pocket to reach out like a match or a lighter. And Danielson has to like fight him. They get into a brawl because Eddie Kingston was about to light Jericho and Danielson on fire. And so while they're brawling, Mox is trying to get the brawl to stop. Chris Jericho comes from behind with a steel chair. He like whacks all of them, basically gets them to stop. But then Danielson gets a little bit of control back in. He looks dead at the camera. He says, "Now I'm gonna kick his fucking head in." And then he just gets chop blocked from behind by Hager with the bat. I forget its name. And then so Hader like takes off his belt, starts choking Danielson. Jericho locks in the Walls of Jericho on Danielson at the same time, and Danielson has to pass out and lose. Oh my God, this match was wild. And I didn't even mention any of the high spots, any of the crazy table bumps. This is like the match that you need to watch. This is definitely going on my match of the year list. It is so much fun, so many surprises. A perfect homage to ECW and like the crazy style that was. Just great stuff all around. And I mean, I don't know where they're going to go from here. I kind of see Blackpool Combat Club feuding with Eddie Kingston, Santana, or Ortiz, and sign me up for that, because those promos are going to be outstanding. Jon Moxley and Eddie Kingston's history, Danielson and Eddie Kingston's history. This is just going to be so good, man. William Regal with Eddie. This is going to be great. This is going to be great. I'm so excited for this. But following that, let's rope it in. Let's rope it in. I really love that match, though. We had the AEW Tag Team Championship match. This is a triple threat tag match. Keith Lee and Swerve Strickland taking on Team Taz, represented by, of course, Powerhouse Hobbs and Ricky Starks, versus the champs, Jurassic Express, Jungle Boy, and Luchasaurus. This was a fun match. I will admit, I was a little bit drained after how much fun I was having with the Anarchy Rules match, but this was still a lot of fun. You really get some great spots from Lee and Swerve working together. But towards the finish here, Starks hits Keith Lee with the FTW title. He looks to hit Jungle Boy with the same title, but Cage pulls Starks out of the ring, and then Jurassic Express hit Thoracic Express for the win. This is great stuff. Great stuff. Sorry. Got really excited there for a minute with that Anarchy stuff. I don't know where they're going to go from here. I kind of think that Keith Lee and Swerve need to do something else. I don't know. I mean, I feel like they haven't really gotten their win back over Hobbs and Starks, have they? Maybe I'm missing something. So we'll see. Jurassic Express, they kind of were teasing. This is the most I've seen them kind of tease like a breakup, because they were like miscommunicating. I think Jungle Boy like booted Luchasaurus a couple times. So like Yeah, I could see that happening. I think something needs to change. The tag division feels kind of stale right now. And although all three of these teams are a lot of fun, it's just this isn't the most meaty story. It's not as tangible as FTR, Young Bucks, and even FTR and well, sorry, not FTR. Even Lucha Bros and Young Bucks. Sorry about that. Brain fart there. So yeah, they definitely need to do a little bit, but that tag division is just stacked beyond belief anyway, so I'm sure they have something in mind. Following this, though, we have the main event. CM Punk taking on and dethroning Hangman Adam Page. Man, I'm a little sad, man. I'm a little bummed. I love Hangman. I do think he's gonna be the first two-time champ. I really do believe that. And I think this story might be it, might be how he gets there, because he definitely was having a crisis of confidence here. Leading into this match, he was, saying, I have to do this because I have to defend AEW from people like you. So I think the overarching story is that, you can't get stagnant. You can't get comfortable. You have to be willing to accept change. And that change coming in the form of CM Punk, And I think once he's mastered that portion of himself, he'll be able to dethrone Punk or whoever's champ and be a double champ. But yeah, let's get to this match. It was excellent. It was hard hitting. Towards the end of the match, though, Paige has the ref's knocked down from a GTS attempt. So Paige looks at his title. He's like, he thinks about using it, but he doesn't. Goes for the buckshot, gets caught for a GTS for the win. And it's a big moment for CM Punk. I'm kind of surprised they did it here and not in Chicago, where I think they're having oh no, I think Forbidden Doors in Chicago, huh? I don't know. All Out, maybe? Something's always in Chicago. But anyways, yeah, I'm a little surprised that they did it this early in Adam Page's reign and also in the city, but CM Punk gets a great reaction anywhere except for Long Island. So we'll see. We'll see where this goes for Punk. For Hangman, I think this still clearly establishes his story and his re road to redemption is very much there, and I'm excited for it. I think Adam Page has, to be honest, been my favorite champion, and I know that's a bold statement with how short his reign was, but he is my favorite champion. Just you can never forget the road they took to get there, I think a lot of people do that with Steve Austin. Is like Steve Austin didn't have the longest title run, but his road to get there was always so good that it didn't matter how long his title reign was or what happened during it, because all we remember is the really, really good stuff. I think Heyman falls in that same camp. We just remember what was really good, and that was all of his matches and all of the build. From basically the start of the company to him being crown champ. So that's where I think, I mean, man, I know that was bold. I know it was bold, but it's what I believe. So yeah, that was Double or Nothing. Like I said, it was a pretty good show. The big moments were huge, but a lot of this card felt like it was just dynamite quality level matches, that just needed a little more build. But yeah, we also got a debut that I forgot to mention. Roosh is in AEW now. It was Andrade had a backstage segment where he's like, tired of the AHFO, tired of these losers. I'm bringing in someone who's the real deal, and then it's revealed to be Roosh. So that should be fun. Roosh is a great, great talent. They have plenty of history to mine. They basically started Los Ingol, but not Los Ingol. Benares de Japón. Wow, I can't say that. But yeah, that should be fun. The next thing I guess I'm going to talk about, because I'm not going to talk about Raw and SmackDowns. Very sorry if that's what you guys are looking for. But I am going to talk about the Hell in a Cell pay-per-view that is this Sunday. I know I keep forgetting too. So we're going to do some predictions here. I only have some of the matches confirmed. Only the Raw side has really been confirmed, which is kind of crazy. But since all the Roman contract stuff, it looks like he will not be appearing at this pay-per-view. So I am gonna guess some of the SmackDown side, but let's talk about what's been confirmed right now. So let's start off with probably gonna be maybe the worst match of the night. We'll see. I mean, the talent level's outstanding. It's just going to be kind of a weird match. The Judgment Day taking on the Club, AJ Styles, Finn Balor, and Liv Morgan, of course. It is a six-man or six mixed match challenge match. So, you know, everyone's going to be in this match. I think Judgment Day have this in the bag. They need the win. They need to solidify themselves as a unit. But it is WWE. So I can very much see them, you know, just having the faces win, because heels don't need to win in WWE. They just lose and cheat and lose and cheat. And then they're never taken seriously, but that's okay because we're still going to do what we're going to do anyway. So we'll see. But if it was up to me, I would have the Judgment Day win here, give them that win to really legitimize themselves. And you can still continue the story. And eventually the Club could win a match, you know. Maybe not this match, but maybe Edge loses to Finn Balor or something, you know. Or he loses to AJ again, which I don't know. I wouldn't want to see that either, though. So we'll see. We'll see where this goes. For now, I'm guessing Judgment Day have it in the bag. Then let's talk about possibly going to be... I don't know, man. This match is going to be weird. It's going to be fun, because these are both pretty good wrestlers. I think we often forget how good of a wrestler Ezekiel is. But it's Ezekiel taking on Kevin Owens. I don't know what they're going to do here. I don't know if this is going to be like a full comedy match, or if this is going to be like a really workhorse, like out of nowhere match, you know? I would love for there to be a tease of like Elias showing up. Of Elias going to sing his song or something, you know? I think that'd be really fun. And so my prediction right now, though, is definitely Ezekiel picking up the win, continuing on this feud of Kevin Owens, you know, having this vendetta against liars. So yeah, that should be a fun match, though. Following that, let's dive into the handicap match of MVP and Omos taking on Bobby Lashley. This is how handicap matches should be. It should be always a face taking on two people, never the other way around. And yeah, I think that this is going to be MVP and Omos's like win here, because they lost the cage match technically. And I think this is just going to be not necessarily a squash. I don't know, man. They booked Bobby really strong. At the least, there's going to be some Cedric interference. Then like MVP hits him with his cane, and then Omos hits like the big move and gets the win. But I definitely see MVP getting the win here. Which might lead to MVP and Bobby having a singles match, because that's kind of what this feud feels like. It doesn't feel like he's feuding with Omos. It definitely just feels like he's feuding with MVP, which I'd be all for. I think that'd be a really good match. And their story that they're telling is fine. It's repetitive, but I think that's just WWE's nature of storytelling. But, you know, I think it has some real solid ground that it's standing on. But then we have a WWE United States Championship match between Austin Theory taking on Mustafa Ali. Unfortunately, they are in Mustafa Ali's hometown of Chicago, so he's losing. WWE loves to get that hometown crowd mad, and I think the perfect heat magnet in their eyes is Theory, so I'm pretty sure Theory is going to win this, probably after some Ciampa interference or The Miz. Or The Miz is special guest ref. You never know. But I definitely see Theory retaining the title here. Now, we have the WWE Raw Women's Championship match. Triple threat. Bianca Belair taking on Asuka and Becky Lynch. This is the toughest one to call. This is Bianca's, I believe, first title defense since winning it at WrestleMania. Right? Did she defend it at Backlash? I don't remember. I don't think she did, though. Maybe she did. Anyways, maybe it's not her first, but it's definitely a title defense. And I don't know. I really don't see Asuka picking up the win here. I think that she will eventually take that title off Bianca. I just don't see it happening here. I kind of see her and Becky Lynch getting themselves eliminated, like just wiping each other out, and Bianca able to hit the big move because of that. So, for now, I'm going to have the champion retain. I think that's my official prediction. And I think it just furthers along this story, you know, that we aren't getting a one-on-one match. So, you know, you have room, you have wiggle room to move this along. And then finally, let's discuss the Hell in a Cell match between Cody Rhodes and Seth freaking Rollins. Will Cody go 3-0? Well, honestly, I had him not winning that Backlash match. I didn't think he was going to go 2-0. So I kind of have to root against him here. I think Seth's going to pick up the win at Hell in a Cell. Otherwise, what else could they do? My kind of thing is, Money in the Bank's coming up. I definitely think Cody's winning Money in the Bank. I think that's a guarantee. So let Seth have the win here, and then he has a little bit of claim when they're both eventually in the Money in the Bank match, and that's where Cody gets the bigger win, is in the Money in the Bank. I think this is going to be a phenomenal match. The other like running joke is, will Cody bleed in the cell? And I think 100% he will. I don't care if they're going to call it hard way or whatever. His blonde hair will be at least a little stained with blood by the end of the night. So yeah, that should be a really fun match though. I have a couple guesses as to maybe pre-show and like main show matches. I kind of see Riddle and Nakamura doing another tag title match against the Bloodline and losing there. But I also see the New Day with Drew McIntyre taking on Fight Club, or what, I forget what they're called now, but you know, Sheamus's group. I think that rematch is going to happen on the pay-per-view, perhaps on the pre-show. But the most anticipated match that has been unconfirmed, for me at least, is Walter taking on Ricochet. That's what I want to see on this pay-per-view. I think that would absolutely steal the show with ease. And if we get Walter as the new Intercontinental Champion, that will legitimize that belt so fast. And speaking of that, actually, this is a bit of a tangent. I thought about this as I've been kind of reviewing the show. We now have, you know, the Universal Champion and WWE Champion. They're both unified, right? I think we have already been seeing the benefits of this, because now the U.S. title and the Intercontinental title, to a certain degree, have some more breathing room on the show. They get more time to shine. It also gives both of the women time to shine, both women's titles time to shine. And I don't think you would have saw that if you had like Brock on one show and Roman on the other, because, you know, they were doing a better job of getting their women time, but they were not doing a good job at all with their mid-card titles. But I think everything kind of got elevated, and now we get like fun side stories that are pay-per-view worthy, like Ezekiel and Kevin Owens and MVP and Bobby Lashley. Like, I think this has been a really good period of time for WWE, like overall, in elevating their mid-card. And I think they're going to have like some really good main eventers in a couple years based off of this. Especially like, you can see the roots in like in Riddle. Like, Riddle's such an obvious one. But also Theory. Theory's a really good name that is looking like a main eventer already. Liv Morgan and Mustafa Ali. Like, these are all people that definitely are going to be like up there, and it's with this time that they're allowing them to have, you know. But anyways, another unconfirmed matchup that I don't know will really happen. I think Raquel Gonzalez might get a rematch against Ronda Rousey. If not against her, she'll definitely have a match against Shotzi at this pay-per-view, which should be fun if that doesn't happen on SmackDown. So yeah, those are my Hell in a Cell predictions. I overall think this is gonna be a pretty fun card. It might go like 3 hours, which is, you know, kind of like the best length that WWE can do nowadays for how many matches they like to stack up on there. So yeah, I'll be definitely watching this on Sunday all over on the Peacock. But yeah, and let's just close this episode out with a little bit of Dynamite preview. Unfortunately, there isn't much to report unless I do a double check real quick, actually. You are seeing me, well, not seeing me, you are hearing me do live research on this show. Okay, yeah, they announced one more match for tonight, tonight when you're listening to this. Yeah, we have Daniel Garcia taking on Jon Moxley is announced. That's going to be a banger. That's just going to be an absolute banger. I think they've had a match before, though. But either way, that's going to be a banger. But also, 8-man tag, Jurassic Express with Matt Hardy and Christian Cage taking on the Super Click kind of Redragon version. Or what do they call themselves? God, I already forgot. They have those ugly t-shirts for it. But anyways, you're going to have the Young Bucks teaming up with Bobby Fish and Kyle O'Reilly to take on those guys. That should be a lot of fun because Kyle O'Reilly and Bobby Fish and the Young Bucks are always really good wrestlers. That's the only things I have for this show. I know it's a little bit of a truncated version. Next week, I'll be back with like full SmackDown review and full Raw review and AEW Dynamite and Rampage, like the full formula. This was just like a really rough week, you know, man. And I'm really thankful for y'all's patience. And please do follow me on Hold for Hold on the Twitter for, you know, updates on the show or anything like that. Like I said in the last show, I believe that I was trying to get the Patreon like free so you guys can always have the notes. But it doesn't look like I can really do that. It looks like when I send the link out and you click on it, you could scroll past the tiers and then you can see the notes or listen to the episodes. But the problem is there's no way for me to like for you to keep me in your feed other than if you pledge, and I can't make the pledges free. It like automatically says no to anything lower than a dollar. So if you want to support me over on the Patreon, that'd be a big help. That'd be really nice. I'm gonna revamp it. I'm gonna put my notes over there, gonna get the episodes uploaded on there as well as the couple of YouTube videos that I've done recently. I'll get those up there. I haven't done another YouTube video since the Roman experiment, which I need to transfer onto audio so you guys can listen to it if you don't want to go watch it. But it's a fun video. It's just it was a lot of work, and I don't have the time for it. As I really wish I did, but I don't have the time for it. Have a great one. I love you guys. I'll talk to you soon. I promise. Bye, guys. Thank you.